The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. For more than a decade, he's been your destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Chris, thanks so much for your voice. We appreciate it every day. Thank you.
You have been an amazing advocate for the conservative cause.
I'm so grateful to you, Chris, and your unbiased reporting.
You're the best, Chris. Thank you.
And then you have a young guy, Buttigieg. They're saying how to say his name. Buttigieg. Food edge edge. You say food? And then add edge edge. Food edge edge.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
Just after 6 o'clock. Good morning. Fast Eddie Chiazzo, the executive producer of the show, with you this morning live. And Chris will be back with you. No worries. I don't want to get the tweets. Chris is fine. He's doing great. But he will be back with us on Monday. So until then, just like if you had a Southwest flight over Christmas break or any flight yesterday and you're stuck in Philadelphia, well, you're stuck with me. And good morning. 610-850-0990 is the number. 610-850-0990 on Rush Limbaugh's birthday. That's right. So my birthday was January 7th. Rush, Thursday, January 12th. Well, at least this year it's a Thursday. So happy birthday to Rush. And in honor of Rush, we have a very special treat for you coming up at 8 o'clock. Chris sat down and spoke with Bo Snerdly, a.k.a. James Golden, a.k.a. the call screener, official program observer, and friend of Rush Limbaugh. He's also the author of the book Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years. So you're not going to want to miss that at 8 o'clock. And again, I'm Fast Eddie Chiazza. I'll be with you for the next 2 days. And I am sorry if your flight got grounded yesterday. Don't know what's going on there, but don't worry. Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg, he's on it. Okay, so we'll get into that and what happened there yesterday a little bit later. So the Republican Party, I didn't get to share this with you. I wanted to give my take on the speaker's race because my wife will tell you, I watched these. I tortured my family and actually watched late into Friday night, into early Saturday morning. Watched it all unfold, watched the antics on the floor, and it got me thinking once we finally had a resolution. The Republican Party has a PR problem. Now, the most national and public PR problem that reared its ugly head all of last week into the weekend and culminated with Kevin McCarthy picking up the gavel late Friday night into early Saturday morning and waving it in the air before then saying that his first order of business when Congress returns, well, that would be repealing the funding for 87,000 IRS agents. Great. Fine. Agree totally. Let's repeal the 87,000 IRS agents. I don't know any conservative that doesn't agree with that. Now, why the fight in the first place? Well, 20 members of Congress wanted serious concessions before awarding Kevin McCarthy the speaker's gavel. They didn't trust McCarthy. Why? Congressman Scott Perry of PA, who was on the show yesterday, but he said on this show at that time that he approached McCarthy in the month of November after the midterm election, or after the red wedding, you could say. And he told him this speaker's race was not a lock. The Freedom Caucus is not on board. They're not on board with voting for you, Kevin McCarthy, and we need to have some serious discussion about this. McCarthy ignored him. The discussion came up again before Christmas. You don't have the votes, Kevin. McCarthy ignored him again. Now we're in the new year and a beginning to the 118th Congress. Some members go to vote for Speaker and the 20 is born. 20 members who will not vote for Kevin McCarthy. That's a problem because the Republican slim majority in the House doesn't allow McCarthy to net those votes that he needs. A second vote is taken. No dice. You were not, at that time, Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. That was to start last week. A quick question. Is there any doubt that Hakeem Jeffries will be Speaker of the House the next time Democrats are in the majority? You're the smartest audience in all of radio. You know, barring an emergency, Hakeem Jeffries' candidacy for Speaker is not in doubt. The Democrats, in unison, nominate Hakeem Jeffries each time a new vote comes up last week. No dissenters. And there was a speech every single time. Now, the dumbest thing we can do as conservatives is doubt the intelligence of our political opponents. They have proven that they know how to win elections far better than we do three straight times. Now, don't mistake. We know the Democrats' ideas are crazy. They're out to destroy the country. They're out to destroy our borders, strip our identity as Americans. They'd much rather we be decent global citizens of the world without a border or a native currency. They want our kids to lop off their body parts if they don't feel like the gender they were born. They want us to rely solely on government-funded transportation instead of owning our own vehicles. Unless they're, of course, electric vehicles, which, the infrastructure isn't in place to support yet, but that's what they want. They want to release violent criminals from prison back into the streets to murder again. They want to provide endless cash and resources to fight a proxy war with a nuclear superpower, by the way, while selling our strategic petroleum reserves to another hostile nuclear superpower. They want to neuter the Supreme Court. They want to federalize elections. They want to eliminate your ability to heat your home in extreme cold and even cool your home in extreme heat. They want to expand government so much that they can eliminate people that they disagree with, and they want to do that through government agencies like the DOJ, the FBI, and yes, the IRS. They already did it before to the Tea Party. Hell, you want to know how crazy it's gotten? The Democrats even want to take away your gas-powered stove. So it's very important you understand, while those things I just mentioned sound crazy, that's called Democrat policy in 2023. And you best not underestimate their intelligence and be foolish enough to think they're stupid, because they've been able to enact policy just like that without any opposition from Republicans or people in their own party who may disagree with that. And there are, they exist, folks. They're out there. There are some Democrats that don't want to go along with this craziness. But the speaker fight last week, that brings us back. This PR problem that Republicans from the top down have. What would you say the most memorable moment from last week's speaker fight was? Was it Matt Gaetz's floor speech, crapping all over Kevin McCarthy? Was it Chip Roy nominating Byron Donalds and saying for the first time in the country's history, there are two black members of Congress nominated to become Speaker of the House? Was it Dan Crenshaw exhaustedly speaking about the 20 and naming them terrorists for opposing California Kevin? Was it Kevin McCarthy himself ceremoniously taking to the House floor and waving the gavel in the air for the first time, signifying the power of the People's House had returned to the party that was on the right side of history every single time since the Civil War? If you were watching Fox News, maybe these moments were the most memorable moments for you. Bravo, Sean Hannity would be proud. But for the people who don't pay attention to the news as closely as you and I do, and have to catch bits and pieces of what's happening from their local newscaster because you know, let's face it, we're busy making lunches, sending kids off to school, then going to work 8 to 12 hours a day. Well, the most memorable moment and highlight they were treated to was this.
House Democrats will always put American values over autocracy, benevolence over bigotry, the Constitution over the cult, democracy over demagogues, economic opportunity over extremism, freedom over fascism, governing over gaslighting, hopefulness over hatred, inclusion over isolation, justice over judicial overreach, knowledge over kangaroo courts, liberty over limitation, maturity over Mar-a-Lago, normalcy over negativity, opportunity over obstruction, people over politics, quality of life issues over QAnon, reason over racism, substance over slander, triumph over tyranny, understanding over ugliness, voting rights over voter suppression, working families over the well-connected, Xenial over xenophobia, yes we can over you can't do it, and zealous representation over zero-sum confrontation.
So did you get all that? Hakeem Jeffries just played the ABCs of House Democrats. And he, that was the moment, folks. That was his Barack Obama moment. That's a preview there of your next Speaker of the House. You ready for that? And that was it. That was the moment from last week. That's what people who might have not have the time or interest to consume the news like we do, that's what they heard. That's what they saw. That was plastered everywhere. They loved it. Does that sound like a straw man to you? I'm sure it does. Does it sound like a strong, pointed leader and communicator to everyone else? You betcha. Republicans do not have the media. Republicans do not have popular culture. Republicans do not really have much room for error. Now, do they? Here's Kevin McCarthy just after Hakeem Jeffries dropped the hot clip moment you just heard.
I know the night is late. But when we come back, our very first bill will repeal the funding for 87,000 new IRS. You see, we believe government should be to help you, not go after you.
Who sounds like a more powerful speaker there? Does that invoke any confidence in any of you? Republicans have allowed the Democrats to take an organization their voters have hated for many, many years in the IRS and turn them into heroes. And it's all in the name of equity. The Democrats included more than $70 billion in their Inflation Reduction Act to bring on 87,000 new IRS agents. And people like Elizabeth Warren were running around out there saying this is necessary to make sure all the billionaires pay their fair share. The United States has north of 700 billionaires in this country. So I think 87,000 new government employees needed to deal with that is a bit of a stretch, wouldn't you say? So, the Democrats, what do? They go on point, they go on message. Whoopsie, but there's only 700 and some billionaires. So yeah, 87,000 new IRS agents. That's probably a bit of a stretch as to what's needed to deal with them to make sure they pay their fair share. So that's not a good selling point. How about this from Jared Bernstein from the White House back in August?
Why does America need 87,000 new agents?
So, look, I think that this reporting has been pretty convoluted. Here, I want to quote something from the commissioner of the IRS, Commissioner Rettig. These resources, he's talking about the reason, what you're referring to is resources in the Inflation Reduction Act reverse what I call a shadow tax cut, which is the long-term defunding of the IRS to facilitate tax evasion by wealthy evaders.
Oh,
here's what Commissioner Rettig said.
That's a better way of
putting it. These IRA resources are absolutely not about increasing audit scrutiny on small businesses or middle-income Americans. As we have been planning, and he's the commissioner, so he knows what they're planning, our investment of these enforcement resources is designed around Treasury's directive that audit rates will not rise relative to recent years for households making under $400,000. In other words, IRA resources will not add to audits for households under $400,000, and those same households will not see one penny increase in their taxes based on proposals in the Inflation Reduction Act. So let's just make sure the record's clear on that point.
Let's make sure the record's clear on that. And Biden has repeated that over and over again. We're not going to pay the people who make less than $400,000 a year. I'm going to pay it. Okay, same week in August, Peter Ducey asking Karine Jean-Pierre, as Chris calls her, Jean-Claude Van Damme, asking the same question. 87,000 IRS agents. What?
Who around here decided that Americans were crying out for more interaction with the IRS?
I don't understand your question. You have to say more.
Do you think it's going to be popular when the 87,000 new employees hired by the IRS go around and start auditing people to pay for the Inflation Reduction Act?
So it's very clear. The IRS commissioner was very clear on this. He said that on the record, that this only will only apply to those earning over $400,000. The commissioner said, and I quote, "These resources are absolutely not about increasing audit scrutiny on small businesses or middle-income Americans, as we have been planning. Our investment of these enforcement resources is designed around Treasury directive that audit rates will not rise relative to recent years for households making under $400,000. So this is focus on those who are, corporate wealthy tax cheats that Republicans, congressional Republicans, wanted to defend. That's who they wanted to defend. They wanted to defend those corporate tax cheats. This is not about that. This is not about folks who make less than $400,000.
So no new audits on anybody making under $400,000 a year.
Very clear. No.
Now, you just heard the official Biden administration responses to this. Jared Bernstein from the White House, who is very unimpressive and even more unimpressive from this administration. Jen Psaki's successor, Karine Jean-Pierre. So you just heard that. The official Biden administration responses to this. Was there any scrutiny besides that? Was there any media pushback besides right-wing media? No. No one from NPR, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, the AP, no one, AP, anyone else, no one pressed them with these simple facts. Even a simple Google search will show you that, quote, "The taxpayer class with unbelievably high audit rates, 5.5 times virtually everyone else, ready for this, were low-income wage earners, taking the earned income tax credit." Now, that's not from the Heritage Foundation. That's not from the Taxpayers Protection Alliance. That is from Syracuse University's Transactional Records Access Clearinghouse. Syracuse University, not a right-wing think tank. So how was this a winning issue? How were the Democrats able to expand their leadership in the Senate and prevent the, quote, red wave from sweeping Congress a few months later in this election? Because just like in the election itself, Republicans were very, very far behind. They went on cable news and complained about it. They pulled some of the same clips I just played you, but in the end, that wasn't enough to convince the American people that expanding the IRS is a bad idea. So now that they've eked out a small victory in Congress, they're able to finally getting around to try and do something about it. They passed the Family and Small Business and Taxpayer Protection Act in hopes to, quote, rescind more than $70 billion in funding to the Internal Revenue Service. Bravo. Well done. Promises made, promises kept. But what's the problem there? Now, I thought I found one teensy minor issue with the Family and Small Business and Taxpayer Protection Act. It's named well. House of Cards would be proud. It's named perfectly. And it's not that I disagree with it, any of it. Of course, I don't disagree with it, but I wasn't alone in my cynical thinking. A tweet from the Babylon Bee's managing editor Joel Berry reads simply, "The 87,000 IRS agents will not be repealed by the Senate. The days of impotent message votes designed to fuel re-election campaigns are upon us." And he quote tweets images of Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise, who I like a lot, and Ronnie Jackson of Texas, all puffing their chests, excited about the first bill of the 118th Congress they just voted for. And California Kevin was quite mad at Matt Gaetz for fundraising off the speaker battle last week, when in fact Gaetz was completely on the mark when he started his fight against McCarthy with this.
"But we were threatened by my committee chairman to be on the Armed Services Committee, Mr. Rogers, that if we did not vote for Mr. McCarthy, we would be removed from committees. Our position is that if Kevin McCarthy is the Speaker of the House and we don't have an ability to ensure that there is oomph behind the agenda and energy behind our oversight, that the committee assignments don't mean that much anyway. I'm not here to participate in some puppet show where we pass a bunch of messaging bills, send them to the Senate, watch them die, fail to use leverage, and don't hold the Biden administration accountable. I don't want to relive the Benghazi experience where it's just theater pretending to be oversight, right? We can do better than that, and that's our purpose today."
And that's exactly right. Gaetz is exactly right. So all the crapping on him that Fox News did and Kevin McCarthy and everybody was angry at Matt Gaetz for fundraising off the speaker fight. Well, he's exactly right. Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise, they're raising money off of this bill that's going nowhere. McCarthy passed the Family and Small Business and Taxpayer Protection Act to the Senate. We'll watch it die, and he won't use leverage. McCarthy didn't use any leverage when he went into that meeting at the White House with Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden, because if there is any leverage to use in that situation to stop $1.7 trillion taxpayer dollars from going out there, you know, into the ether, just gone, Kevin probably won't have figured out what that leverage is until 2024. He just complained afterwards that he pleaded with Cocaine Mitch to wait until I have the gavel before passing the omnibus spending bill. Whoops, sorry, Mitch didn't wait. He wrangled a total of 18 Republican senators, including himself, to pass the damn thing. And he'll do it again and again and again. Kevin McCarthy dropped a whole bunch of knowledge bombs on how to ballot harvest because of this insane voting laws in California. You know when he did that? He did it after the 2022 midterm election, when Republicans in swing states really could have used that knowledge to win. I didn't foresee Election Day becoming irrelevant, but the Democrats sure as hell did, and the Republicans continued to run around trying to get people to vote on Election Day and got slaughtered because half the votes were already mailed in by then. Kevin had 2 years since 2020 and should have put out an APB on what California congressmen like himself had to do to win. So Kevin, while I hope and pray Ronna McDaniel gets booted and replaced by Harmeet Dillon, and I hope the Republicans take back the Senate and the White House in 2024, it's going to cost a lot of money at the grocery store, at the gas pump, and in taxes before we get there. And if same-day voter registration gets put in place, like Josh Shapiro wants to do here in Pennsylvania, the Democrats are going to have a whole new voting block in illegal immigrants coming in to replace the voters that are leaving states like Pennsylvania. Start thinking ahead. Don't lead from the back and play defense every time the next speaker, Hakeem Jeffries, will punch you in the face. And he just punched you in the mouth like he did, you know, that night you became speaker. It was his moment, not yours. And for God's sake, have a darn good PR firm on retainer that knows how to anticipate the hits that are coming, and knows how to respond when they are received. It's time to fight back. And if that puts you on the opposite team of Ronna McDaniel and Mitch McConnell, so be it. Mitch showed how much he respects you by ramming the omnibus bill down our throats. He thinks the number one issue Republicans care about is stopping the war in Ukraine, when you and I both know though, we the people are scared. We're scared of crime in the streets, the 40-year high inflation we're facing, whether or not there's a baby formula or medicine available, and whether or not we'll have a job to wake up to tomorrow. So get in the game, Kevin McCarthy. 610-850-0990 is the number. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. .35 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Fast Eddie Caiazzo, executive producer of the show. Happy to be with you this morning. Chris will be back on Monday, but again, stick around. We have a, well, not because you love me, right? No, but we also have a very special guest at 8 o'clock. Bo Snerdly, Chris conducted an interview with, a.k.a. James Golden. Oh boy, now the phone's ringing in here. How about that? So, but yes, it is raining outside. We're looking at showers in the PM tonight with a high of 54. Tonight, rain and a thunderstorm, windy, low of 52. Tomorrow, windy, high of 54. So, Biden aides find another batch of classified documents at a different location. What do you think of that?
It's so irresponsible.
Oh, yeah. So now we have Joe Biden with his Penn Center for Global whatever the heck that thing's called in Washington. He has documents there, and now a second batch is found. That's strange. A second haul of classified documents belonging to President Biden have been located, a new report revealed Wednesday. 2 days after the White House admitted secret papers were kept at an office the commander-in-chief used after leaving the Obama administration. That's right. This NBC News reported the new documents were found at a separate location. Now, just to get the name right of the first place, the first batch was found at the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement in Washington. And he had that office set up there when he was a professor at Penn. So, 10 sensitive files in the first batch, some of them marked top secret. They were retrieved on, am I seeing this date right? November 2nd, 2022. Oh, whoa. Discovered that the first batch of top secret documents discovered on November 2nd, 2022. Well, that was right before the election. Must be a coincidence. It was not immediately clear when or where the second group of documents were found, when they date from, and what level of classification they've been given. The first batch, 10 documents, included intelligence memos, other materials concerning Iran, Ukraine, United Kingdom, and that was reported by CNN on Tuesday. Papers dated between 2013 and 2016 and mixed in with Biden family documents, including the details on the funeral arrangements for the president's late son, Beau. That's sad, but that was mixed with documents, classified documents that the vice president of the United States shouldn't have had or have been keeping, that we, you know, just found out about on November 2nd, not 2 days ago. So Biden made his first public comments in Mexico. Someone finally got a question in there, and here's what he had to say about it.
First, people know I take classified documents and classified information seriously. When my lawyers were clearing out my office at the University of Pennsylvania, they set up an office for me, secure office in the Capitol. The 4 years after being vice president, I was a professor at Penn. They found some documents in a box, locked cabinet, or at least a closet. And as soon as they did, they realized there were several classified documents in that box. And they did what they should have done. They immediately called the archives, turned them over to the archives. And I was briefed about this discovery and surprised to learn that there were any government records that were taken there to that office. But I don't know what's in the documents. My lawyers have not suggested I ask what documents they were. I've turned over the boxes. They've turned over the boxes to the archives. And we're cooperating fully with the review, and which I hope will be finished soon. And there'll be more detail at that time.
So Biden doesn't know what's in the documents, right? Then how do CNN and MSNBC, MSNBC just had a side-by-side up on their screen there of the difference between Biden's documents and Trump's. So, excuse me, I got distracted there. But CNN and NBC knew what was in them. They were intelligence memos, other materials concerning, quote, Iran, Ukraine, and the United Kingdom. That's what was in them, Joe. How did the media outlets know about it? And how did you not know about it? Now, if you listened to the show yesterday, Chris's take was maybe this is on purpose. Maybe this is a way for Trump to be relieved of this whole document mess because the Democrats want to run against him. Good theory. Good point. My line of thinking is somewhere else. I think. So you have to understand the Democrats don't have any way of getting Kamala Harris over that bar for 2024. Now, they could ballot harvest like crazy as they've done. But depending on who the contender is and who the leadership is in the Republican Party, by the time we get to 2024, we might have figured out a way to. I'm not going to say we're going to find the same amount of ballots that the Democrats seem to find in Philly, Chicago, Atlanta, Detroit. I'll say Wisconsin. I guess what's the problem area there? Green Bay. I'm not saying that the Republicans are going to find the same amount of ballots that the Democrats were able to collect and harvest. I'm not saying that, but they might find a way to offset that, then rendering the votes even heading into Election Day, where Republicans usually have a stronger turnout. So my take on this, the Democrats have no way of putting Kamala Harris over the top because she's unpopular. She was the first out in the Democrat primary in 2020. Nobody likes her. Larry Elder, when he was on this show, had said that the Democrats can't win without Kamala Harris because she brings the large black female contingent to vote. It's another interesting theory. So if they have no way of getting Kamala Harris over the top, clearly Kamala Harris is very special to Barack Obama and Susan Rice, the real people that run this country right now. She's important. And if she's not going to get elected in 2024, if Trump, you know, the Democrats think their easiest target is Trump, according to Chris, that's what he said yesterday. But if it's not, if this goes wrong, Kamala might get beaten in 2024. And the Democrats, because they're able to telegraph and kind of see into the future, unlike the Republicans usually can, I think they know this. I think that's why we're seeing Gavin Newsom rise to a little more prominence. So this is a way to elevate the, oh my gosh, I got to shut this phone off. Woo. Let's mute this ringer. Huh. I don't know what's happening here. Victoria, if you could pick up that line. Thank you. I'll have to figure that out over the commercial break. But anyway, long story short, I do think this is a way the Democrats are poking the bear. They can kind of put their finger in the middle of your chest as Republicans if something does happen to Donald Trump over the documents he had. If something doesn't happen to Donald Trump, then the double standard has come to fore, even though Democrats never have to pay. But I think this might be the way that Democrats can squeak Kamala Harris in there as Veep. If they take Biden out now, they take him out, and this is the way to do it. And then Kamala rises to prominence, and she gets to fill out however long left in the Biden term. So that's what I think is happening. Now, Chicago U.S. Attorney John Lausch, an appointee of former President Trump, he reportedly submitted a preliminary report on the documents to Attorney General Merrick Garland. It's not clear whether Lausch only reviewed the documents recovered from the Penn Biden Center or whether he had access to any other documents that may have been found. Now, how is this different? Merrick Garland, I authorize the FBI to look for the documents at Trump's home in Mar-a-Lago. Biden, it's discovered?
Oh, well, we did the right thing. We turned him over to the people.
Yeah. So they go, signed off on, Merrick Garland signs off on raiding Trump's home. This time, the Biden people, they say they were fully transparent on November 2nd about turning these documents over. So now a Trump-appointed a holdover U.S. Attorney John Lausch is looking into it. Now, the Democrats and the Biden administration put their best voice out there yesterday to handle this in an exchange with Peter Ducey to address the second batch of Biden documents. Take a listen.
And then on these documents, how could anyone be that irresponsible? Isn't that what this president says about mishandling classified documents?
It is, Peter.
The president spoke to this personally. He spoke to this personally. He, again, he believes that classified documents and information should be taken seriously. He takes them seriously. And he was surprised to learn by any records had been... I disagree. Here's what happened
once... Tell us. Yeah.
Well,
lay it out for us.
Let me explain to you the process. Here's what happened when his lawyers found out that the documents were there. They immediately turned them over to their archives.
But they immediately turned them over to the archives. They did the right thing.
I'm not going to go into specifics, but what I am reiterating to you is what you heard from the president yourself, Peter, which is how he saw the process and how he respects and truly respects and takes this very seriously. And when he knew and how surprised he was by it, mm-hmm. and the actions that the right actions that the lawyers took.
Oh, good.
Again, this is under review by the Department of Justice,
yes.
And we're going to let that process continue.
How can President Biden be trusted moving forward with America's secrets?
Because his lawyers, his team did the right thing.
But he had a closet with classified
his lawyers
information
did
in
the
that
right
they found.
Again, he was
right
surprised
thing?
That the records were there. He spoke to this personally. He was surprised that the records were there, and when his lawyers found out and his team found out that they were there, they turned it over to their archives, and now it's being reviewed by the Department of Justice.
Okay, so there you go. The problem, KJP, as the leftist media likes to call it, KJP. They love the initials, right? The problem with that is he was vice president at the time. He wasn't the president of the United States. And this in the New York Post, privately, an administration official told the New York Post that the White House was reluctant to shed more light on the document issue because, quote, anything you say could potentially F up, end quote. The Justice Department review by appearing to influence the process. Mm-hmm. While Democrat and Biden allies have tried to absolve the 80-year-old president of wrongdoing by claiming that the documents were immediately turned over to the National Archives upon their discovery, that does not explain why papers were allowed to leave the White House and be kept out of federal custody for almost 6 full years. It's also unclear what the lawyers who found the documents at the Penn Biden Center were looking for, or why they were clearing out an office that apparently sat unused for more than 3 years. It's also not known where else the documents may have been kept before the Penn Biden Center opened in February of 18. This in the New York Post. Republicans, meanwhile, have expressed outrage at the difference in treatment of Biden and former President Donald Trump, 76, who was under federal investigation led by special counsel Jack Smith for storing classified information at his Mar-a-Lago resort after leaving office in January of 2021. Quote, oh, this is from Lindsey Graham. If you believe a special counsel's necessary to assure the public about the handling of classified documents by Donald Trump, you should apply a special counsel to the mishandling of classified documents by President Biden when he was vice president. Good point, Lindsey Graham. I know you want to weigh in on this. The second Biden documents found. Here we go again. The double standard is unbelievable. 610-850-0990 is the number. 610-850-0990 if you want to get in, chat about the new Biden docs. We're online at 990theanswer.com. Mess that all up, buddy. 654 on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. I know you wanted to weigh in on the latest batch, the second batch of Biden docs. 610-850-0990. Let's go to the phones now. We have Steve from Warminster. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Eddie. How you doing? I know it's on those letters, all those paperwork. That's his consolation letters where they said, we're sorry, Mr. Vice President. That's why they're vice presidential letters. You did not win the presidency, and that please try again in 2024. Don't let this discourage you. What do you think?
They could be. Unfortunately, they well, the Democrats back in 2020 ballot harvested something fierce. So he is the president. But that's a good point. So what do you think?
So I
want to reset real quick. So
yeah,
Chris thinks that this could ultimately be to boost Trump so that the Democrats can face Trump in 2024. I think that they're trying to elevate Kamala Harris before they know she's not going to win in 2024. What do you say?
You can't elevate Kamala Harris. There's just no way. So that I would put that. There's no way. I can't even imagine her being anything. And also, I think it's the work of one of his students, because apparently he was a professor, and he was probably teaching them how to hide paperwork, and they did it for an A. They hid it in his own office, and he couldn't remember where he put it. That's what I think. You know?
Can you imagine being in a class of Joe Biden's? Can you imagine being in his class? Go ahead.
What would you be learning? What would you be learning? Coming to grow up like him? I heard somebody say that the other day. I said, they were like joking. He's like, where are his graduates, by the way? And like, what could a lecture be like? Can you imagine that? Like, and like, Mr. President, why are you here and not on the campaign trail? Like, he never came out of the whatever he was hiding in, the bunker. And then all of a sudden he wakes up and he's president with missing papers. I mean, and now they found them. They just happened to find them when Congress was, you know, starting to kick in.
Sure.
It almost seems like they put it out there to be a news distraction to me, because the Republicans are on the march now. They're making change like they promised. Big time. Big time.
We will see. And Steve, thank you for the call. 610-850-0990 is the number. We have a very special show for you ahead. So up next, we have Katie Talento. She's the executive director of Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries, but she was the former top health advisor at the White House for domestic policy on the council. Now the executive director over there. Yes. And, oh, yes, a very special treat on Rush Limbaugh's birthday. Drum roll. We have Bo Snerdly, a.k.a. James Golden. He will be joining us at 8. We have Montgomery County Commissioner Joe Gale coming up at 8:30. Yes, one of his colleagues and someone he sits on the Board of Commissioners with has just been elevated in the Pennsylvania administration under Josh Shapiro. So we have a lot to talk about there. So Steve brought up the point that Congress is on the march. And if you heard my opening monologue, they better damn well be. Because there is a lot going on. There's Well, let's see what they've been able to accomplish, all right? So now, again, I said they have a PR problem. Now, they don't have the media. They don't have culture. Jimmy Fallon's not going to give them a standing ovation for something like this. Pentagon ditches the COVID vaccine mandate for troops. They said they were going to do that, the House Republicans, when they took over, and they did. Right? Right. House Republican files articles of impeachment against DHS Secretary Mayorkas. Yeah. After leaving the border wide open since Donald Trump has left office. And it was funny. I was talking to a friend last night and he said, well, what all Biden has done is left the same things that Trump had in place. And that has people on the far left very angry because we're still deporting so many people. I'm like, well, then how did we have 5 million people cross the southern border? So anyway, this House Republican, yep, Alejandro Mayorkas, that's Rep. Fallon, Pat Fallon out of Texas. Yeah, Texas. No wonder why. It was him who brought up articles of impeachment. And promises kept. Schiff, Swalwell, and Omar lose powerful committee assignments. Okay, I like that. I can get behind that. So Congress is on the move, as Steve just said. We will see. We will see. Is it going to be ceremonial? Well, anything they pass isn't going to get through the Senate or the presidency. But anyway, lots to get to. We'll be back. I'm Fast Eddie Chiasso.
Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. WNTP, Philadelphia, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been your destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Good morning, Chris. Great show as always.
You really are special. I love the way you and Eddie team, but you really are a gem, Chris. You've got clarity in a very mucky room.
Hello, Chris. You are a national treasure with the perspective you bring to us.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Ah, yes, George Santos of New York. That's the current punching bag for the left. I think I saw, oh my gosh, the Raging Cajun. Anyway, just after 7 o'clock, Fast Eddie Chiasso, happy to be with you this morning. 610-850-0990 is the number, 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. Programming note, Chris will be back with you live on Monday. But today, it's Rush Limbaugh's birthday, so we have a very special guest at 8 o'clock, Bo Snerdly. You're not going to want to miss it. Chris had a conversation with him that I'm going to play for you. Now, remember that baby formula shortage? Yeah, I think George Santos has gotten more coverage than the baby formula shortage. Because, see, the problem is, there still is a baby formula shortage. I actually just tackled this weekend with some other newer parents who are finding that behind the locked glass, there's only just a few left to choose from. So yesterday, the Washington Post puts out an editorial for the nation's health, break up the Food and Drug Administration. That's odd. The same FDA that approved the COVID vaccines and announced it the week after the election of 2020? Yeah, that Food and Drug Administration. This from the Washington Post. The last year, they failed repeatedly to keep the nation's babies safe from tainted formula. The baby formula fiasco was the latest in a long line of food crises that the agency was slow to catch up and handle. But the deaths of babies and the desperation of parents trying to find enough food for their newborns shocked Congress, the public, and the world into realizing just how broken the U.S. food monitoring system had become. How did it shock Congress? I thought Biden was on it. Didn't he fly in baby formula from overseas? Remember Operation Get Formula or whatever the heck it was called, where, you know, an embarrassing moment for the United States, were flying in baby formula from other countries? I thought this Congress was on top of it. Huh. Nope. I guess we're going to have to wait for the 118th Congress to deal with that. So for this, we bring in former top health advisor at the White House, the Domestic Policy Council, and now Executive Director of Alliance of the Healthcare Sharing Ministries. That's AHCSM.org. She joins us now, Katie Talento. Katie, good morning.
Good morning, Eddie. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I think the last time you and Chris had spoke was during your official position at the administration. I guess bring us up to speed. What's changed since then?
What hasn't changed since then? I mean, America is in free fall. I think our parents, in particular, of small children, are really lost without any help at all from regulatory agencies that are supposed to help them out and protect their babies and save them from poisoning.
Yeah, I guess let's get into that. So Washington Post puts out an editorial yesterday. Bloomberg, they actually did a study, Bloomberg Law. All but one of 33 baby food products recently purchased by Bloomberg and tested by an accredited laboratory, they were found to contain at least two of three heavy metals, lead, arsenic, and cadmium. So not only can parents not get baby formula right now, but the food that they do have access to contains some pretty nasty stuff.
Yeah, it's really scary. And, you know, this isn't a new issue. Congress did its own investigation. Even a Democrat oversight committee of Congress, they did two reports on this within the past 3 years. And there was another private think tank that found that 168 baby foods and found that one in four of them had one of these heavy metals. There are links between these heavy metals. I mean, very evidence-based, overwhelmingly supported links between heavy metals and the diagnosis of autism, so exposure to heavy metals in babies and being diagnosed with autism later. You know, this is just par for the course. I mean, first we have the baby formula shortage, as you mentioned. Then we have, now there's this antibiotic shortage. You can't get pediatric medicine. You have parents who have screaming kids with, you know, horrible ear infections or strep throat, and they can't help their kids and find medicine for them in the local CVS or Walmart. But what can they find in the local CVS or Walmart? Thanks to the FDA, they can now find, as of just this week, they can find abortion pills for their kids. Right. So now CVS and Walmart are going to be abortion clinics. And, you know, they can also find booster shots for their babies that have been tested only on rats, only on mice. So, I mean, it's really kind of shocking what the priorities of this agency are. They've been completely captured by industry. And, you know, I think this started decades ago when FDA first started taking money from industry as some sort of well-intentioned effort by Congress to speed up review. But now the agency is, you know, paid to speed up review, not paid to protect the American people. It's really scary.
No, I'm so glad you brought that up because it was scary. I actually went through the medicine shortage myself. I mean, not for me, but my wife and I actually had to cancel like plans that we had to celebrate our 10th anniversary. Now, I'm not looking for any tears, but it was, you know, my parents said that, you know, my son just didn't like look right. He had a temperature and then it would go away and everything. So we had, you know, we had to come home and he had a double ear infection. So I was like, oh my gosh. Now it's funny where I guess I don't want to say where I take my son for medical care, but they have offered the flu vaccine. They have offered the coronavirus vaccine. They've pushed and pushed for these things. But every single time I've called them with a problem, they always say, oh, you know, give him some children's Tylenol or children's Advil or whatever it is. And he'll, you know, bring his temperature down and he'll be fine, as opposed to seeing him. I'm just like, that's not going to work this time. So I finally made an appointment. Turns out he did have a double ear infection this time. It was really bad. So we go to, he gets the prescription. What is that? Amoxicillin, whatever the pink stuff is. It was bubblegum flavored. So when we go to the pharmacy, they said, okay, here's the first batch and that'll last 5 days. I'm like, okay, but he needs 10 days worth of it. It's just like, yes, give us a call on Monday and we should have the other 5 days treatment. I'm like, well, what the heck is going on? So
I know, it's rationing now. It's crazy.
I couldn't believe it. So again, we're speaking with Katie Talento, Executive Director of Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries, AHCSM.org. But yeah, no, I'm really glad you brought that up. And so I guess what are the next steps here? Like, what?
Well,
it's
a great question. I mean, you mentioned Tylenol. Speaking of more FDA failures, it recently came out that Tylenol is not actually safe in pregnancy, despite everything we've always been told. So it's really horrifying that our agencies are being captured by industry and that they're more interested in what's easy to comply with for industry. I think the thing for parents to do, really, is they've got to go natural, and they've got to, unfortunately, like we saw during COVID, we've got to take matters into our own hands. We can't trust the authorities and the institutions out there that we've always trusted when it comes to healthcare, whether it's government regulatory agencies or whether it's even our own pediatricians. You know, even the medical profession has been co-opted in a lot of ways. It's been really scary over the past few years. We've seen how they've been taken captive to groupthink, and pediatricians are firing parents that, you know, won't vaccinate their kids with these shots that have only been tested on mice or rats. So I think that parents need to take, you know, a few steps. First of all, the worst food that universally seems to have exposure to these heavy metals is that rice cereal that you give your kids when they're coming off of breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. And so there are other options. Oat cereal is a little bit better, but you don't have to feed, you know, high carby cereal to babies anyway. It may not be the very best thing for them. In fact, we're seeing this rise in childhood obesity due to all these processed carbs. You know, it may be better to blend up natural foods, blend up, you know, milk and meat, blend up milk and butter and cheese and fruits and vegetables. So that might be a safer approach for babies and actually a more nutritious one.
So we're speaking with Katie Tolento, Executive Director of Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries. Katie, so we have the baby formula shortage. We have this problem with tainted food for babies that, you know, Congress, you've said, has known for decades about. So this is not a Republicans or Democrats problem. It's a Republicans and Democrats problem. So is there anything you can foresee in this new Congress? You know, even though the Republicans only have the majority in Congress, is there anything that they can do right now in the next 2 years?
So the only thing that Congress can do when they don't have, you know, a majority in both chambers, or even a majority of really conservatives in one chamber, is oversight. And I'll tell you, it's a little bit more discouraging even than that, because oversight requires issuing subpoenas. I worked in the Senate for 15 years, and I worked for a number of oversight committees. And we would issue subpoenas of the Obama administration, and they would just ignore them. It was the first time I'd ever seen subpoenas ignored. And I assume that the Biden administration will do the same. And so the way to enforce a subpoena is the Speaker of the House has to take that the target of the subpoena to court in order to enforce it. The Speaker can only pick one or two battles like that a year. They don't have time or resources to, you know, sue for 300 different lawsuits to enforce all the subpoenas coming out of the oversight committees. So it makes it really difficult. And I suspect that the administration will do everything they can to stymie this. I mean, ultimately, we can't rely on government, whether it's Congress, whether it's FDA. We can't rely on them. We're going to have to protect our children using our own wits at this point.
All right. Katie Tolento, Executive Director of Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries, AHCSM.org. And one more thing, because I remember you were the former top health advisor at the White House for Domestic Policy Council. Do you foresee this Congress having the gumption to issue those subpoenas and carry out this oversight you speak of?
I do think they will. I think they will. I'm really encouraged by the so-called sort of church committee that Jim Jordan will be headed up. And they're going to do all kinds of hearings, and they'll do their very best. If they can't get an administration witness to respond to their subpoena, they'll still bring in other outside witnesses, and as many as they can, whistleblowers and others, to try to bring awareness to the issue and lay the foundation for future legislation if they could ever take back the Senate. But I do think that, you know, it's going to probably be disappointing. Anyone who puts their trust in a Republican Congress is going to be disappointed.
You don't say.
I mean, even though it's my team and I love them all, but, you know.
Well, Katie, can you actually tell us real quick, this healthcare sharing ministries, what's that about? Cause I'm just reading along here. Healthcare sharing, not health insurance. It's different. So, please expand on your current role.
Yeah. Healthcare sharing ministries are a non-insurance alternative to financing medical bills. And what it is, it's sort of like a homeschool co-op for healthcare. Where religious believers come together in communities and they agree to bear one another's burdens and share each other's medical bills. So you go to the doctor, you say, hey, I'm a cash pay patient. Give me your cash price, your discounted cash price. You upload your bill to your ministry and the ministry taps a few other members on the shoulder and asks them to send you money to pay for that bill. And so every month you're sending money to other members for their medical needs. And occasionally, God forbid, when you have your own, members will help you out. And so, what the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries does is we work with state legislators and regulators and federal legislators and regulators to try to protect the religious freedom of Christians and other religious believers around the country to participate in this. There's a lot of hostility, frankly, coming out of blue states who think that, you know, the ACA is the only option. They don't want people to have these other choices. So we're constantly playing whack-a-mole, trying to beat back efforts to ban our options. But there's over a million Americans enjoying these ministries now. And so we encourage everyone to come to our website and check it out.
All right. Well, then I guess I got to ask you then about this anti-abortion bill that the House Republicans put across yesterday. What are your thoughts? What were their intentions here?
Well, you know, it's not anti-abortion. It's actually anti-homicide. So, I'm not just calling abortion homicide, as many people do and many people agree with. But no, this is about babies that survive an abortion and are alive on the table and whether doctors are supposed to take care of them and render medical care in that moment. And a majority could not be found of Democrats. Now, I'm not even sure one Democrat voted for this. And I'm not even sure that every Republican voted for it. So I would urge everyone to take a good hard look at your representative in the House and see how they voted. It's really scary to me that 200 Democrats voted no on rendering medical care for a baby that is alive on the table and survives abortion. I mean, what constitutes a human being at this point? If it's not being out of the birth canal, what is it?
Yep.
It's scary.
That's a great point, and we will monitor it along with what this Congress is going to do about food for children here. So Katie Talento, thank you so much. She is the former top health advisor at the White House Domestic Policy Council, now executive director of Alliance Healthcare Sharing Ministries, AHCSM.org. Let's have you back soon, Katie. Thanks.
Thank you, Eddie.
On Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Fast Eddie Chiazza, the executive producer of the show, with you this morning. Chris will be back on Monday. Have no fear. Chris will be here. So he'll be back behind the big microphone in the big chair on Monday. So yes, the House Republicans, they used the new majority to approve anti-abortion measures. Now this, I'm reading from PBS, and I want to explain why. PBS, well, NPR, I don't know if you remember from, I think this was only a few weeks back or maybe a few months back, they broadcast an abortion live on the air. Mm-hmm. So that's where your tax dollars are going when you fund PBS, NPR, public broadcasting. Anyway, yes, so this from PBS, House Republicans taking early action on abortion with their new majority, approving two measures Wednesday that make clear they want further restraints after the Supreme Court overruled the federal right to abortion last year. They didn't overrule the federal right to abortion. This is very clear. The left owns the language. We gotta break them of this, or we at least gotta come back stronger, right? They did not end the federal right to abortion. They turned it back over to the states because there is no right to abortion in the Constitution. Let's be clear about that, okay? One resolution they passed was to condemn attacks on anti-abortion facilities. Yeah, that's strange. What's it been, 7 months now, and I don't think anybody has been arrested for attacking pro-life in these crisis pregnancy centers? Yet Elizabeth Warren back out there. These crisis pregnancy centers are bad. Yeah, remember? Yeah, so they were torched, vandalized, some of them destroyed. At their own expense, they had to rebuild, and, you know, the help they're offering young mothers, that's demonized by the left. So, yes, we should figure out what is happening and why nobody has been charged with torching these anti-abortion facilities. So we are definitely going to follow that. That includes crisis pregnancy centers. Then the separate bill that would impose new penalties if a doctor refused to care for an infant born alive after an abortion attempt. And by the way, if Roe v. Wade was the federal right to abortion, and it's so dangerous for women now that it's gone, when did Kermit Gosnell exist? When did he do all the awful things that he did? Well, he did that when Roe v. Wade was still standing. So, just some food for thought there, okay? An evil monster like Kermit Gosnell existed in the world of Roe v. Wade where he would... He's a very, very bad, bad person. So anyway, PBS. Neither of these bills, they're expected to pass the Democrat-led Senate, but Republicans said they were making good on promises to address the issue along with other legislative priorities in the first days of power. Quote, you don't have freedom, true liberty, unless government protects your most fundamental right, your right to live. And he's the new House Judiciary Committee Chair, Jim Jordan, out of Ohio. Even so, the two measures are far from a bold statement on abortion, which has proved politically tricky for Republicans since the June Supreme Court decision that overturned Roe v. Wade after almost 50 years and allowed states to enact near or total bans on abortion. While some Republicans have pushed to expand on the ruling with a national ban, no, that was just Lindsey Graham. He was the only one that stupidly came out near the election and said, hey, now that we've overturned Roe v. Wade, why don't we try to make this national? What do we stand for? And then ultimately help the Democrats win, but I digress. Or a compromise ban that would limit abortions after a certain point. Many Republicans have rejected that option. It has become clear that most Americans would oppose it. A July AP NORC poll showed Republicans largely opposed to allowing abortion, quote, for any reason. And after 15 weeks into a pregnancy, but only 16% of Republicans say abortion generally should be, quote, illegal in all cases. Majority 56% say their state should generally allow abortion 6 weeks into a pregnancy. According to AP's VoteCast, a national survey of the midterm electorate, 61% of all voters said they were in favor of a law guaranteeing access to legal abortion nationwide. Nancy Mace, she's the Republican who opposed. She herself is opposed to abortion, but she believes the early push on abortion is misguided and believes the majority of voters in her swing district opposed SCOTUS's decision to overrule Roe. This is probably not the way to start off the week, Mace told MSNBC. I want to be absolutely clear, this bill has nothing to do with Supreme Court decision, said Missouri Rep. Ann Wagner. She's the Republican sponsor of the bill. Now, I had to go to the Washington Post for this one. Yes, I have presented a motion Wednesday, first time the new role. House adopted a resolution 222 to 209. And Washington Post, just like NPR, points out it has no legislative weight. It condemns attacks on pro-life facilities, groups, and churches. Reps Vicente Gonzalez out of Texas, Chrissy Houlihan out of Pennsylvania, and Marie Glusenkamp of Washington were the only Democrats to support the measure. Chrissy Houlihan. Very interesting. What about Madeline Dean over there in Montgomery County and her district? Madeline Dean's district is congressional district 4. I always thought it was Montco. The Democrats have gerrymandered the PA map so much that I have no idea what are all the other areas that she covers. But here's what Madeline Dean had to say from the House floor about the abortion bills yesterday.
It is a crime now to kill a child born alive. In fact, in May of 2013, a Philadelphia man was convicted of first-degree murder in the killing of 3 infants. He's now serving life without parole. Either my colleagues on the other side of the aisle are unaware of this already existing crime with a penalty of life without parole, or this is another extreme political stunt. Let me be clear. Abortion care is health care, and that has been true for a very long time. My colleagues on the other side of the aisle are not interested in medical truths. No, instead, they are interested in scaring people, outlawing all abortions, and criminalizing anyone they can. Politicians have no business making unsound medical decisions. We are legislators, not doctors. And in the unfortunate case when a child is born with fatal disabilities, this legislation will deny parents a say in how their child spends the final minutes, hours, or days of his or her life, whether hooked up to a medical device or in the arms of his parents. Expecting parents have enough worries. They should not have to worry about extreme politicians in their doctor's office or hospital, thinking they somehow know better. I urge my colleagues to vote no on H.R. 26.
Aha, that's your congresswoman out of District 4, Madeline Dean. So, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't she saying that if a baby is born alive, then the proper thing to do is to kill it? Is that what I just heard? I think it is. She also talks about the 3 infants, the man that was charged in Philadelphia with killing 3 infants. Well, this is strange. I remember a story last year where, sadly, a pregnant woman was shot and killed. And when Krasner, you know, because obviously it's getting scarier and scarier, more women and children are getting shot and killed in Philadelphia, and it's a very sad reality. But when that happened, Krasner said he was going to introduce murder charges against the woman and for the baby that was inside her. Now, why do Democrats do this? Why do they, in a moment of publicity, when they're talking about what they're going to do and how they act, they don't look at babies that are born, even from a failed abortion, as an actual baby or a human life? Yet when it's politically useful to them, they do recognize that it's a human life. Quite the double standard. The proposals under consideration Wednesday are more measured than the legislation Republican leaders had seriously considered introducing had they won a larger majority in the midterms. Besides, legislation on survivors of attempted abortion leaders had considered introducing Rep. Christopher H. Smith out of New Jersey's bill that would ban the use of funds for abortion for health coverage. That includes abortions, often referred to as the Hyde Amendment, and prohibit abortions from being performed at federal health care facilities or by a federal employee. Now, he brings up an interesting point here. How much money from the omnibus spending bill, how much money went to abortion? The omnibus spending bill that 18 Republicans passed, I'll read this from Politico, X clinics around the country provide free and discounted contraception, STD testing, and other services for millions of low-income people. Fiscal 2023 omnibus spending bill lawmakers released Tuesday, this was back in December, keeps funding flat for the Title X family planning program at $286.5 million for the ninth year in a row, a blow to reproductive health groups that urged the fall of Roe v. Wade warranted a substantial increase. NARAL, Planned Parenthood, and the National Family Planning and Reproductive Health Association blasted this decision. Huh, $286.5 million of your tax dollars. They blasted that. Planned Parenthood standing against you. Quote, at a time of great crisis for reproductive health in this country, Congress has again utterly failed to safeguard access to the birth control and sexual health services made possible by the nation's family planning program, said Claire Coleman. She's the president of the National Family Planning and Reproductive Health Association. Without those critical resources, agencies will be forced to shorten hours, lay off staff, and even close their doors, leaving patients without access. Now, this is a great trick that Democrats play on Republicans. So if you were to bring up abortion to your friends, to your leftist friends, say, assuming you have any, if you're to bring abortion up to them and you say, look, I understand where you're coming from. I don't agree with it. One of the things that I say a lot is that I don't want my tax dollars funding abortion. Got it? And then they hit back with, well, you see, it's not just abortion that happens at Planned Parenthood. It's mammograms. It's health safety checkups. These are for low-income people. This is free health care, free women's health care. I was just like, no, it's not. They do provide abortions at Planned Parenthood. And you know why I don't want my taxpayer, why my money or yours, $286 million to, oh, I'm sorry, $286.5 million out the door that 18 Republicans just signed off on in this omnibus spending bill that goes to that? You know why? Because if you ever look at the Democrats that are running against the Republicans you want to vote for, you find that little nugget in there of a big donation from Planned Parenthood. Why do you think John Fetterman was out there stumbling like an idiot at Monco for his big rally? I am John Fetterwoman. Well, why was he doing that? Because Planned Parenthood gave him a lot of money. That's what's happening with the tax dollars. That's what just passed in the omnibus spending bill. And the leftists are very, very mad that we couldn't spare more than $286.5 million to funnel to them for their health care. There was some more talks on the floor, some more audio from that hearing yesterday. Victoria?
And lady from Oregon, Ms. Bonamici.
Oh, Oregon, yeah.
Woman from Oregon is recognized for 1 minute.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This bill is extremist, dangerous, and unnecessary. Extremist because it would criminalize doctors with up to 5 years in prison and put them in fear of providing life-saving, medically necessary procedures to those who are pregnant. Dangerous because the bill has no exceptions to protect the health of the patient and no exception for cases where there is a serious fetal anomaly. And unnecessary because, as Mr. Nadler said, it's our
lady from Oregon, Ms. Bonamici.
She's woman done. From Oregon is recognized for 1 minute.
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
Uh-oh.
That's yay.
I hear it twice, Eddie?
No, yeah, right. So, yes. Your tax dollars are going to abortion. So if you don't agree, then you better call up your congressman. You better look at the donation records to Democrats there from Planned Parenthood. So you just heard Madeline Dean, who represents District 4. Does anybody in Madeline Dean's district have anything to say? More. Abortion rights groups labeled the legislation as deliberately misleading and offensive. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists says the measures take decisions out of doctors' hands, forcing clinicians to administer interventions even when there is no chance of survival. Let's be clear. Doctors are already required to provide appropriate medical care by law, says Jacqueline Ayers, a senior vice president at the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. The two votes Wednesday are expected to get overwhelming support by Republicans who earlier in the week voted against the Democrats' Roe codification bill. To counter the bill on infant survivors of attempted abortion, Democrats will force a vote on a motion by Rep. Diane DeGette from Colorado. Yeah, that bill would prohibit government restrictions on abortion care. It is expected to fail. So the Democrats, their response is, let's embolden the Kermit Gosnells of the world. Let's, instead of voting for this bill, and I'm glad the Republicans got them on record, because, folks, that's what this was about yesterday. This was about getting Democrats on the record, taking the extreme position that, yes, if a baby is born, and they were supposed to be aborted, that they will not care for them once that baby's born. They will terminate that living being that's on that table. So that's just to be clear. That's what the Republicans were doing. They were forcing this vote and Democrats to take a position on it. So the Democrats on the other side, they don't want to protect living, breathing babies. Got it. 7:45 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. If you want to jump in, 610-850-0990 is the number, 610-850-0990. We are online at 990theanswer.com. Be back. On Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, Fast Eddie Chiazzo in the big chair behind the big microphone. Happy to be with you today. Chris, we'll be back on Monday, so you have to spend 2 days with me, all right? And if you're stuck at the Philadelphia airport, or if you were, you're not alone. Actually, the last time I was behind the mic, we had the Southwest problem. People being stuck in Philadelphia and across the country. So if you are here, thank you for listening. You'll be treated to something very special. Today, Rush Limbaugh's birthday, Chris and I wanted to celebrate. So Chris caught up with James Golden, a.k.a. Bo Snerdly, a.k.a. the call screener, official program observer, and friend of Rush Limbaugh. Rush, of course, left us. James Golden, Bo Snerdly, he's also the author of Rush on the Radio, a tribute to his sidekick of 30 years. So you're not going to want to miss that. That's at 8 o'clock. So stick around. After that, we have Joe Gale, Montgomery County Commissioner, coming on to speak about the latest vacancy coming up on the Board of Commissioners. So you're not going to want to miss that either. So if you are stuck, here's the latest on the NOTAM outage that caused flight delays and cancellations. From NPR. Sorry, that makes me laugh when Chris does that. The NPR. Flights across the U.S. slowly resumed Wednesday after a nationwide ground stop by the Federal Aviation Administration, stemming from the outage of a crucial piece of technology. The failure of the Notice-to-Air Mission Systems, or NOTAM, N-O-T-A-M, caused airlines to cancel more than 1,300 flights and delay nearly 10,000 more. That's from FlightAware.com, the flight tracker. The FAA said early investigative work traced the blackout to a damaged database file, but the agency is still working to determine the root cause. Does that make you feel better? Probably not. At this time, there is no evidence of a cyber attack. The FAA is working diligently to further pinpoint the causes of this issue and take all needed steps to prevent this kind of disruption from happening again. The NOTAM technology, which alerts pilots and airports of real-time hazards, failed late Tuesday. Pilots could still get updates through other means while there were fewer flight departures. But as morning approached on the East Coast and more flights were slated to take off, the issue hadn't been resolved. The FAA ordered a ground stop a little after 7 Eastern and ended around 9 a.m. So it took hours for flights to get back on track there. But remember how I said if you're stranded, never fear. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg emphasized the shutdown was needed to keep passengers safe. He also directed, quote, directed an after-action process to determine root causes and recommend next steps. Now, you remember Scott Perry, the congressman of Pennsylvania, he was on with Chris yesterday, and he is on the Transportation Committee, and brought up something that gives me a little bit of hope in dealing with Democrats moving forward. We talk about, so the Republicans are not going to be able to pass bills, likely, that are going to pass the Senate or get signed off by Joe Biden. So we know that, but they can provide some accountability. And Scott Perry said something yesterday that I thought was very important. And he said that we're looking into why this failed and what backups were in place. So was there any kind of backup plan for to deal with this kind of issue? This issue obviously comes a week after major disruptions with Southwest Airlines over the holidays led to more than 16,700 canceled flights. So I just want you to know, not to fear. Pete Buttigieg is on it, as he has been all along. He's been awoken from his slumber. And actually, Victoria, I think we have audio. Let's just see how our transportation secretary has handled the big issues of transportation the last year and a half, 2 years. Take a listen.
Is infrastructure fun?
Yeah, absolutely.
4 million of air travelers, the return to the skies has been a nightmare. More than 20,000 cancellations and 173,000 delays since Memorial Day. I sat down exclusively today with Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg to ask him what more can be done ahead of July 4th.
Oh, we're watching it closely, and we're talking to the airlines every day about their responsibility.
Uh-huh. And after American taxpayers gave the commercial aviation industry $54 billion during the pandemic, can you understand why some taxpayers feel like they aren't getting their money's worth from the airline industry?
That's right. A lot of passengers have experienced frustration, including me.
In the last 2 days, more than 15,000 flights were delayed across the U.S., and more than 2,300 others were canceled.
The bottom line is it's still not an acceptable level of delays and cancellations.
A lot of disruption, thousands of flights canceled, even more delayed. It was kind of a brutal summer for travel. What can be done about
That's
this?
Just
Do you
summer.
Think... this issue will be sorted in time for the holidays.
I think it's going to get better by the holidays. We're really pressing the airlines to deliver better service. So many people have been delayed, been canceled. It's happened to me.
Is that not a lot of secretaries of transportation over the years have been on late night talk shows?
Well, I'm glad to be part of changing that.
Yeah, you are. You are. You're a change maker.
I think we're still many months away from getting to a level where we're all confident that the system could fully absorb a major weather event. You've got passengers who are stranded. You got passengers who can't get a hold of customer service. It's an unacceptable situation.
We do begin with that travel nightmare across the country. Mm-hmm. Flights nationwide were grounded this morning after the Federal Aviation Administration ordered a pause on all domestic flights.
Aha! So what were they talking about going into that July 4th?
Yeah, we're talking to the airlines, and we're going to make sure that everything's in tip-top shape, and we're pressing them, and we've been talking with them every day, and we're still talking and talking and talking. And what has Pete Buttigieg ever done?
So remember last year, the supply chain shortage? He did absolutely nothing. You had Biden. He tried to Biden out there.
We're going to work around the clock to fix the supply chain.
Well, supply chain's not fixed. And, oh, by the way, remember that caller who at the time who said the trucks 10 year that are older than 10 years could no longer go into California in Los Angeles, one of the biggest ports in the country for all the incoming goods that we see that, you know, feed the supply chain. Remember they said those trucks, if they were older than 10 years, they weren't allowed to be used because of the emissions, the emissions they were putting out into the environment. Remember all that? Pete Buttigieg knew then, did absolutely nothing, hasn't relieved the supply chain crisis. Pete Buttigieg knew in the summer that there was going to be a problem with the airlines, and Do you think this will be solved by the holidays? No, it wasn't solved by the holidays. You had Southwest screw up, and now you have the FAA screw up. So what are you doing, Pete Buttigieg? I know you guys want to get in here. 610-850-0990. Fast Eddie Chiazzo will take calls on the other side.
Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. WNTP, Philadelphia, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Hey, Chris, my husband and I really enjoy your show. Thanks for doing what you do.
Hi, Chris, I love the show.
You're just breaking rules all over the place.
Thank you very, very much for your sane reasoning and conversation.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Just after 8 o'clock, Fast Eddie Chiazzo, the executive producer of the show. Happy to be with you this morning, and I will be with you again tomorrow. Chris, everything's fine with Chris. He's doing very well. You can keep up with him at the Harumph Society if you want to hear from him direct, but he is doing just fine. Never fear. I don't want to see it on social media. All the questions that come in, Chris is just fine, and he will be back live with you Monday, back behind the microphone in the big chair. So never fear. So I want to get to a very special interview in 1 second, but we did have a call. Paul in King of Prussia wanted to weigh in today. And if you yourself want to call in, 610-850-0990 is the number, 610-850-0990. So Paul's on the line. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, morning. I don't know if you saw, they did manage to fix the NOTAM system, change it from notice to airmen to notice to air missions about just a little over a year ago.
Yeah.
So they did upgrade it. They got the word men out of the title. That's for sure. But
thank God.
Here's what I struggle with. They spend about $150 billion a year on the FAA.
Uh-huh.
And that system, you know, either somebody spilled coffee into the, you know, a Coke can into the computer. I think it was hacked. I don't think you'll ever find out that it was hacked.
Sure.
But we're supposed to believe that the volunteer staffed system that runs out of paper in Luzerne County and has the printer settings wrong in Arizona is absolutely unequivocally bulletproof, period. I don't even know how people can say that with a straight face, but I just thought that'd be an interesting contrast.
No, Paul, it's a very good point. And if you'll remember, there was also a cybersecurity attack on, what was that? The oil pipeline. Remember that? What was that, a year or two ago?
So if you want to get a little nervous, go back and look at SolarWinds, the software that was being used that got hacked, that was used all over the federal government. And if you find the right people, the smart people that talk about it, they say that these hackers are so deeply embedded in the systems, you'll never get them out.
Wow.
And the way that works, I do this a little bit for a living. The way that works is it's just planting little Easter eggs all over the place that, you know, one day they're going to try. So, you know, this whole thing might not have been about doing an air ground stop. It probably was about, did we actually get in there and did we actually get the information we wanted? And somebody made a mistake because they don't want a ground stop. They want to be able to get in the entire FAA system. And it's, you know, SolarWinds is the software that was the problem, and it was all over the federal government. And you want to stay up late one night. That's some stuff to read about for sure.
Well, Paul, I appreciate it. Little insight there. $150 billion for the FAA, but only $286 million for Planned Parenthood. Both are serious problems. Both are broken. Lots of wasted money in the federal government, isn't there? Anyway, you are tuning in to hear on Rush Limbaugh's birthday. I told you, I promised at 8 o'clock we would do this. I'm very, very excited about this. Chris was able to catch up with Bo Snerdly, Mr. James Golden. He is the call screener, official program observer, and friend of the late, great Rush Limbaugh. His new book, Rush on the Radio, a tribute to his sidekick of 30 years. Here's Chris and Bo Snerdly.
You know, this week marks a special week. I think for those of you who are longtime Rush Limbaugh fans, you know that this week marks what would have been Rush's birthday. And every year I always look forward to the beginning of Rush's shows, because that always meant that Snerdly and the team would come busting into the studio and sing happy birthday to him. I'm so honored that James Golden, Bo Snerdly, the official program observer for Rush's show for so long and author of the book Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years, also a prolific radio host in his own right. He joins us this morning. James, it is just a real pleasure to be with you again, sir. Good morning to you.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's always a pleasure to be with you, and I appreciate the opportunity.
I'm sure you get tired, very tired of this question, but it's just one that you can't avoid anymore, particularly given all the news and the constant craziness that is the news cycle, specific to the House Republicans. Everyone always imagines and wonders, what would Rush say? What might Rush think? You were around him a long time. Here's the one I'm dying to ask you. In the fight between Kevin McCarthy and those 20 recalcitrant Republicans, I said on the show, gosh, I wish Rush were here. I'd love to listen, because so many in conservative punditry were having a hard time with that. And I thought, I can't imagine Rush would. Dare you guess what Rush would say?
Nope, I don't.
Because you don't guess?
No, because no matter what I used to think, and I used to go through this even before the show with him, some of us would sit and say, I wonder what Rush is going to say about this. And whatever guesses we ventured up, they were never accurate, because he always found some angle or something that was inside of the story, whatever that story was, to have a different view than we thought he would have on things. But I think that there are some broad strokes that said that we can go on. Rush always acknowledged that there was a disconnect between the people of Washington, D.C., the elected class, and the people who actually sent them there. And so I think what we saw last week, and believe me, that question that you asked, I asked, I saw it all over social media. I wonder what Rush would have said about this. I think that if you have people that are asking for financial constraint, that is certainly something that Rush had talked about. I mean, I remember when Rush brought up the idea that Washington was broken because of the way that they budget. And doesn't all of this relate, or didn't a lot of that relate back to at least the financial part of the discussion that Chip Roy had with leadership?
Yes.
That all goes back to how broken Washington, D.C. has been on this issue of budgeting. We know that Rush was not timid about being an opposition party, and in fact lamented many times that the Republican Party failed in their mission as an opposition party. So I think that that would give us some clue as to what he was thinking about, what these 20, or as they were called, disrespectfully, the Taliban 20, and then Dan Crenshaw calling them terrorists, what they were demanding was basically accountability. And they wanted some accountability, not the business as usual. I think it's safe to say that Rush would have been appalled at this $1.17 trillion omnibus bill that was just loaded with goodies for the left. And I think we know that consistently he would have been, he talked about those things. So I think most of us kind of guess which side he would be on. The only question is knowing exactly what he would say about maybe individual members and what they were getting out of it, or so forth. But in the broad strokes, I think we all felt, and this is one of the things I think that's so great about Rush, I think he left us enough over the three decades that he was on that we can kind of figure out which direction he would be leaning on most of the big news events of the day. But I've never felt comfortable saying this is what he would say. I don't know.
I always wonder if he, you know, I talked with Catherine when that wonderful, beautiful book came out, Radio's Greatest of All Time. I have a copy of it on my nightstand, as a matter of fact. And I I know she gets that same question. I know David does. Everybody that was closest to him, you professionally and personally, you're all people desperately want you to be his spokesman from the beyond. But I also know he was kind of aware of that. Catherine shared that he, you know, as he was dying, he was aware that it was important that he document as much as he could. And apparently they worked together doing that. Did you ever talk with him in any way about a legacy left behind?
We talked about so many things over the 30 years, and certainly what his impact would be. But yes, came up. And in time, you know, there were times when I always remember one conversation that I had with Rush when I went into him and I said to him, if it were not for him, this country would have already followed Europe into disabling more of our own energy resources because of global warming. And he looked a little bit surprised at me. And we had a conversation about it in which I realized that Rush was so humble in certain ways that he did not think of himself, despite this enormous power that he had to sway public opinion. He didn't spend a lot of time at that point in his career anyway thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
He was thinking about the next day and what he was going to do for the next show. And he was just so driven on that. So I'm glad that that Catherine and Rush had the time to spend to document a lot of that. And because it is important. And when I go back and I look now, I was just looking through some of the Limbaugh letters that have come for almost the whole 30-year period. And it's amazing how many of these conversations continue to recycle in our national conversation.
Yes.
In different ways, but they still recycle. And so he has left between the book, between the newsletter, between the archives of his show, and with 30 million listeners, still many of them still wondering what he would think about things or keeping his name alive. He has left a profound legacy on this country.
James Golden with us. His book is called Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years. Now that you do radio regularly yourself, and I don't know how regularly you were broadcasting when Rush was still with us, but now that you do it regularly, do you think much about him stylistically in the way you do it, or are you your own man and you don't really think a lot about Rush when you broadcast?
Well, for 7 years doing the show, I was doing a weekend show on WABC anyway. So, and I've always had my own style. So, as we all do, and that's one of the, you know, I was in the business quite a while before I met Rush.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in this business almost my entire life, radio or and mass communications. So, of course, I think about him in certain things. But I try not to plagiarize, and if I do, and I frequently said, will say on my show, this is what Rush said, and so I'm basing, you know, what I'm saying now based on that.
Yes,
and that's an important part of my own. Look, the other day, in fact, I got someone that emailed me about this because I said the other day something that was certainly true, that I had no idea I was a conservative until I met Rush. I knew that I had political thoughts. I've been political since I was a kid, but I never identified as a conservative until Rush framed what a conservative was. So from that point, of course, what I do going forward will be intertwined with that. But stylistically, I have my own style and that I've tried to develop, and I try to stay true with that. But I mean, when you work with someone for 30 years, like I work with Rush, it's just part of the fabric of who you are. So that's going to come out in various moments at various times throughout. But there are things that he did specifically to his show that I would not try to mimic out of respect for what he did. Like I won't, for instance, call something the blah, blah, blah update, because that's something that he did.
Right.
And I don't want to try to mimic or plagiarize things that he did out of respect for the unique ability that he had as a broadcaster that was solely his.
I don't think I spoke to you the last time we talked much about your role on that show. The program observer and the call screener, screening calls is a lost art in this business. quite frankly, your role in doing that. I mean, Rush used to say it somewhat jokingly. I mean, it was always tongue-in-cheek, you know, to make the host look good. But you were very mindful when people called, and many in this audience listening now called you, and you probably talked with them. How did you identify that role? Did you and Rush spend a lot of time talking about what it meant to screen a call for air with Rush?
Yes and no. We didn't have to because, look, I'm a radio professional.
Yes.
I had been producing other shows before Rush. The reason that Rush and I clicked was because I was good at what I did, mm-hmm. and I paid attention to it. And so for me, in my entire business, I've always understood the value that calls bring to a radio show. And so one of the reasons that my screening clicked with Rush is because he understood that I was giving him the very best that I could with calls. And it's not just selecting the calls. It's where you place the calls in order. I mean, Rush relied on me, and a lot of hosts will look at a call roster and then they'll pick a call. He relied on me to actually line up the calls where they would be most effective in the show. There were other aspects of it. Call screening is incredibly complicated if you do it right.
Yes.
It is not a call calls in and you put it on. And so he understood that. It's the way that he described it, the calls were the records. You know,
yes.
Looking at it in relationship to a music station, you have to know when to play certain records. You have to know, for instance, also when a record is worn and you don't play it anymore because it actually at that point serves as a turnoff to the want on the show. And it was shift, by the way. And so we had a lot of conversations about that. This Rush was just one of the most amazing broadcaster.
Yeah.
He took everything about his work extremely serious and expected to do the same. And when you have a group of people, a team of people all pulling toward a level of excellence, then that's what you get as a result, an excellent product. And that's that he was. What else can I say? He was the greatest of all time in radio.
It was always one of the most interesting segments. It would only happen a couple of times a year, James, when you guys would bust into the studio while he was live on the air. I mean, that's unprecedented. You never heard another voice but Rush's during that 3-hour window, with that rare exception of his birthday, when you'd hear you guys singing. That was always fun to listen to.
And it was always fun to do, and he knew it was coming,
yeah.
And he always told us not to, and we just were going to do it anyway. And finally, I guess he resigned himself, because then he was like, I know they're going to do it, yeah, despite me saying no, and that's right, we are going to do it. It was...
It's the best. It's so much fun. It really humanized him. I know you must miss him a lot. I don't know how you once told me you think of him every day. I don't, you know, with some time, you still do, huh?
Day.
Yeah.
Every single day. Every single day. I miss him every single day. And there's never anybody that's going to be like him. I still, you know, I was talking with David. We were texting a few days ago, and I know David is dealing with the same thing. Every single day you miss him because he had such a major impact, not just on our lives professionally, but on our lives on a personal level. He was such an amazing man, and he was so caring about the people in his orbit. And it's a void that just will not be filled.
I learned just from listening. I learned so much from him as a broadcaster. I learned, you know, basically what I do today. I learned from listening, and I learned every day. And he was the only, correct me if I'm wrong, James, he used to say, and it was, you kind of suggested in your own broadcast career, you don't do it. And I think he said he didn't do it. And I listened to him say that, and I don't, except him. He was the only one that I made it a point to listen to every day. Everyone else I ignore, and nothing personal. I didn't ever want to absorb or pick up, even accidentally, anything anyone else did. I remember him saying that, and I liked that. But him, he was still appointment listening. I rushed to the car to make sure I heard what he thought about it, to make sure I didn't miss something or learn what I did miss, you know?
Well, just number one, I would, as much as I would love to listen to radio to other people, I don't have time.
Right.
I'm busy. I'm on the air 6 days a week.
Yep.
My life is consumed with show prep. And when it's not show prep or it's the other aspects of the communication business, you know, the website, I do a twice a day news blast that's out. And so my life is just right now so filled up with trying to meet deadlines and trying to actually do all the reading that's required. You know that. You never have enough time to get all the reading required. That you always feel, no matter how much you've done, that there was more that you could have done.
Yes. I'll close with this. This is a question for you, James Golden, not Rush. This is you. You ready? The epic battle that is simmering, and this audience, your audience, I'm sure most radio audiences were conservatives, and Rush's too, are having this growing debate, Trump, DeSantis. I'm asking you, not what Rush would say, what does James Golden think about a return of Donald Trump versus DeSantis rising up and challenging him?
I think it's too early, and yeah. That's when I've been saying, I love Donald Trump, and I love Ron DeSantis. I love both of those guys. And I've had the pleasure of speaking with both of them. And either one would be a great choice. Here's the thing. Let's just be realistic politically. Donald Trump is facing some legal hurdles right now. We had that grand jury just wrap up in Texas the other day. Was it Texas? Yep. There's so many issues.
I know.
Georgia.
Yep.
Georgia. And Donald Trump, as you know, has been a target for the left because he was so effective since he announced his run in 2016. Would I love to see Donald Trump succeed and be the nominee? Absolutely right. Let's be realistic. He is also hated by a lot of the political class in Washington, D.C. I think it's interesting that he's decided he wants to publicly see Mitch McConnell primaried the other day. Mm. But I think either one would make conservatives happy. And I think it's way too early. There are going to be too many events that happen between now and the time we get underway with the primaries and the primaries close to actually say who it's going to be. But I would be happy with either one of them.
Listen,
and I'm not trying to be political. That's honestly how I think.
No, listen, I told you this the last time we talked. Listening to you and Rush navigate calls during the Trump versus Cruz fight of 2015 and 16, I'll never forget it because I learned during that time how you guys navigated that. I mean, Rush was clearly an enthusiast of Trump, but he didn't sandbag Cruz, and he knew there were a lot of members of the audience that weren't nuts about Trump. So threading that needle is tough when people have passions deep about competitive factions inside Republican ranks.
I would just like to see people be objective about Donald Trump. I know he has flaws. We all have flaws. But I think that Trump is the most underrated president we have seen in terms of understanding the track record, what he was able to accomplish with political knives stuck in his back from members of his own party, with the full weight of the mainstream media opposed to him, and with the Democrat Party. And yet and still, he managed to achieve so many things that conservatives should be happy about.
Yes.
And yet you have a whole class of so-called conservatives that are also willing to stick political knives in the guy's back. The guy is an amazing figure. And certainly, look, from 2016 until now, who has dominated the political landscape? Donald Trump.
That's it. James Golden, he was Bo Snerdly for 30 years, the official program observer, and now a book you must pick up if you're a Rush fan and you don't have it. You need it on your shelf. Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years. Meanwhile, James, people can find you in New York. You're based at 77 WABC in New York, where people can hear your show. And like you said, a newsletter, did you say twice a week?
Twice a day.
Twice a day. Oh, my gosh.
The Daily BS, and we are doing a pre-launch on the website for the Daily BS right now. The Daily BS. And so, yeah, we're busy.
Wow. Well, thank you then for carving out a portion of your day for us. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, Chris. Thank you so much.
How about that? Pretty cool. Your reaction to that, 610-850-0990, 610-850-0990. Love to have your calls. And up next, we have another representative from Montgomery County that is ascending to the top and being appointed. Mm-hmm. Josh Shapiro announced his cabinet picks for key health and human services positions. That's coming up next, and we're going to talk all about it with Montgomery County Commissioner Joe Gale. It's 8:30 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris Stegall on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
.35 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Fast Eddie Chiazzo with you today and tomorrow as well. If you want to chat in the last segment, 610-850-0990. Your reaction to Chris's interview with James Golden, Bo Snerdly from the Rush Limbaugh program. I know you enjoyed that. All right. So Josh Shapiro, our governor-elect, Josh Shapiro, well, he appointed his Secretary of Health, Deborah Bogan. She was a pediatrician and director of the Allegheny County Health Department. Secretary of Drugs and Alcohol, Latika Davis-Jones. Love the hyphenated last name. It's a leftist standard. Secretary of Aging, Jason Kavalich, Lackawanna County. Insurance Commissioner, Mike Humphreys. And yes, Dr. Val Arcush has been named as Josh Shapiro's Human Services Secretary. So with that, I bring in Montgomery County Commissioner, the Republican Montgomery County Commissioner, Joe Gale. Joe, good morning, and how do you feel about your colleague's promotion?
Good morning, Ed. It's great to be on your program. Well, I'm not surprised because Josh Shapiro is a former Montgomery County Commissioner. He once ran for office with Val Arcush back in 2015 when I was originally elected to the board. And I had an assumption that possibly this could occur where he would bring his cronies and political allies onto the cabinet position as he becomes governor. And it's created somewhat of a change here in Montgomery County. And what's unique, Ed, is out of the three-member board of commissioners here, I'm the only member of the board that's originally elected to the position. So Val Arcush, and your listeners may not be aware, she was originally appointed to become a Montgomery County commissioner. And that was back in 2015 when Democrat Commissioner Leslie Richards was appointed as Tom Wolf, Secretary of Transportation in his cabinet. And now she's head of SEPTA.
Right. Yeah.
And that tells you a lot because a lot of people have been asking me about the process of how do you fill the vacancy when a county commissioner vacates. Mm-hmm. And it's up to the Montgomery County Court of Common Pleas. The judges appoint a replacement, and it has to be a person of the same political party affiliation.
Of course.
Now, that being said, historically, every appointment to fill the vacancy is the same choice of that party establishment. So in the case when Leslie Richards left, the Democrat Party establishment recommended Val Arcush. The courts appointed her. You saw it when Josh Shapiro was elected Attorney General and he vacated County Commissioner. Ken Lawrence was appointed, another Democrat, who also had the support of the Democrat establishment, and the courts backed that up. So I expect that to follow through in this case. I'm not sure who that Democrat will be, but it's caused a stir here in Montgomery County because in 2023, this year, all three county commissioner seats are up for election, including myself. Yes. And make no mistake about it, the number one goal of both parties, both the Democrat establishment and the Republican Party establishment, is to oust me as the minority commissioner, the sole Republican voice on that board. They would rather replace me with a Republican lapdog that plays ball with the two Democrats, and they can grease each other and get deals for their cronies and enrich themselves off the county tax dollar. That's their ultimate goal. And both parties want that. I expect both parties to collude and work together behind the scenes to make that happen. Because the reality is that Montgomery County is an overwhelmingly Democrat county, unfortunately. It's solidly blue. It's not competitive in any way. The Democrats have a lock on it. So whoever is appointed to fill the vacancy of Arcush, that Democrat will coast through in November. As long as they get through their Democrat primary in the spring with the backing of the Democrat establishment, they have a lock. But the minority seat is the real race, and it's important that that minority seat remains a position where we have a watchdog that provides checks and balances. The Democrats may have the majority seats, but we need a bold, fearless conservative voice that fights for conservatism, fights against wasteful spending, fights about the tax against the tax increases. And something else I wanted to mention was the 8 years that Val Arcouch served as a Montgomery County commissioner. Five of those 8 years had a tax property tax increase for county taxpayers. And if you combine that, it's a 46.8% tax increase since she took office. So it's remarkable what Democrats get away with in the Philadelphia suburbs simply because it's solidly Democrat and voter registration, and they don't have to face political consequences. You saw it with one of her last votes as county commissioner when she voted to increase the salary of future elected county officials starting in 2024 by 12% with a built-in increase following that for years to follow. And that's what happens. So I do my best for the families and taxpayers in Montgomery County to be a conservative voice, that watchdog that they can rely on. And I only can imagine what would happen if I was not there on the board. That 12% salary increase would probably be 20%. And these tax increases would be even higher. The wasteful spending would be even more of an expense for the taxpayers. And I just want to make sure your listeners were aware of how this all works with the Montgomery County Board of Commissioners and how they fill these vacancies.
Sure. No, and I appreciate that. And one thing that's very interesting, you know, you were the one kind of glimmer of hope then that when you were elected in 2015. And then I remember, I guess it would have been 2019, where you faced re-election. Now, I want to go through some of this process because I think it's important for people to understand just what happened in Montgomery County. So obviously the establishment was against you and they tried to eliminate you from the ballot. See, how you vote in Montgomery County for commissioner, it's not just – so if they were to put somebody up and they were to put your name up there, what would happen was whoever receives more votes would be the minority commissioner. So like
– correct.
So I guess how do you plan – well, I guess first of all, how does the party, to your understanding – plan to put someone up this year? Do you know of anybody in mind who they plan to run what would be against you or ultimately for a commissioner seat?
I'm sure it's a matter of time before you see other Republicans announce their candidacy to challenge me. And again, the effort will be to unseat me as a minority commissioner. So how it works is in the primary, which is in May, two nominees of each party win the primary, two Democrats. And then, like I said, they have a lock moving into the general election in November, and then two Republican nominees win the primary. So it could be a crowded field. When I ran the first time, there were three candidates, two Republicans won the primary. In 2019, my second round, there were five candidates, two candidates won the primary. And in order to come in the top two, it's more advantageous for the Republican primary voters to bullet vote Joe Gale. And what that means is to single vote, only vote Joe Gale in the race for Montgomery County Commissioner. It's more powerful that way, because if you're voting for two Republicans, it dilutes the standing of which candidate you ideally would like to see win the nomination. And then going into November, the general election, like I said, the political reality is only one Republican will win in the general election. And the voters still have up to two votes, but you don't have to use your two votes. If you bullet vote, again, meaning single vote only Joe Gale in the general election, it gives me a better chance of coming in the top three. And you'll see Democrats hoping that, you know, the other Republican is not Joe Gale. You're going to see the Republican swamp creatures with the same intention to get rid of Joe Gale and replace me with a lapdog that plays ball. So it's very important that the conservative listeners that vote in Republican primary. That being said, Pennsylvania is a closed primary state, meaning you have to be registered Republican to vote in the Republican primary. So if any of the listeners are libertarian, independent, any other party affiliation, you handicap yourself. You're not eligible to vote in the Republican primary. So they would have to update their voter registration status, register Republican, and vote for only Joe Gale for county commissioner and both the primary and the general election. Anyone who tells you otherwise is just blowing smoke and is part of the narrative to unseat me as a minority and replace me with that lapdog.
Right. It's in other words, it's important for people to understand that process, because what you could be getting sold is that Joe and the other Republican will be able to take the majority of the Montgomery County Commissioner's seats. That's obviously right. The numbers. There's no way that's attainable. So that's,
and I wish
that's
that
the
was
point.
The case, but the reality is it is not. It is a solid Democrat county, and that will not happen. And that's not the goal of the Republican Party establishment swamp. Their number one goal, and always has been from day one, when I had my initial upset in 2015, when I won without the endorsement and backing of the Republican Party, is to get rid of me. That's their goal. And like I said, anyone who tells you differently about winning back the courthouse in Montgomery County, they're blowing smoke, because it cannot happen, and that's not their true intention. They are content with the two Democrats. In fact, you see Josh Shapiro, a former Montgomery County commissioner, now governor-elect, he has many Republicans filling these cabinet positions in his new administration.
Oh, yes,
so it shows
he does.
You the amount of establishment collusion that runs straight through Montgomery County. It's a hotbed of it right here, and I'm the only thing standing against it. So it's very important that the listeners realize the significance of only voting Joe Gale for county commissioner.
No, it's funny, and I'm going to get to probably Al Schmidt if I have time in the next segment, because I have some fun. I have an interesting take on the Al Schmidt appointment, but I guess in closing, Joe, I wanted to take politics out of it for a second. And you know, Chris spoke to you a lot in the beginning of the pandemic as to what Montgomery County was doing to mitigate the spread of COVID, the COVID response, the official Montgomery County COVID response. So, I guess what's your assessment of Val Arcush's response to COVID in Montgomery County? Is there anything that she did that you agreed with? Anything she did that you disagreed with? What would you say? Like, so she's filling an important role here as Human Services Secretary. So I guess your assessment of her response to COVID.
Well, the COVID-19 response was most certainly the highlight of Val Arcush's administration. She's a physician, so she was really in her full-fledged glory when she was a county leader during COVID. I think she did a terrible job handling it. She was extreme on the lockdowns, the shutdowns, the mandates, the vaccination mandates, children being out of school, not having in-person education. And I was always that voice in opposition saying, hey, the cure for the disease cannot be worse than the disease itself. And all these lockdowns are not helping the cause, and especially with our children that shouldn't be penalized this way. They're the least they're not harmed by the virus to the degree as senior citizens with underlying health conditions. But one of the highlights, and I've been asked by many members of the media, you know, what do you think the most memorable moment you had with Val Arcush was, was during COVID when she and the other Democrat refused to release American flags to various veteran organizations for them to display at cemeteries on Memorial Day weekend in 2020. And it's interesting because the county is legally obligated each year to supply these American flags for Memorial Day. And we had the flags. We purchased them prior to COVID, the start of that year, had them sitting in boxes, and she would not release them because of COVID. She thought it would be a big health scare.
Yep.
And I said, wait a minute. And this is at a live press conference we had that took place every day. I said, these are people at their own will that want to go outside in the wide open air at a cemetery for people already dead. So to this day, I still cannot understand that. And honor our fallen heroes.
Yeah.
It's the right thing to do. Give them the flag. And she would refuse. She literally held these flags hostage. And I took it upon myself to help raise money at a private charity, purchase flags separately, gave them out to all these veteran organizations, and also helped display them at the cemeteries on Memorial Day weekend. And this was a big hot story in the news media when the flags weren't being released.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was a rebel that got flags separately. I helped display them. And when I helped display the flags at the cemetery, I did it without wearing a mask. And at our next daily COVID press conference, Val Arcush created this big scene where she mask shamed and mask bullied me, saying that Commissioner Gale went out and displayed these flags and he did so without wearing a mask. And you would have thought everyone in the world was going to get sick because I did that outside at a cemetery. And I fought right back. and said, this is ridiculous. How dare you? We need optimism and to bring, we need to put, bring closure to this COVID nonsense. And, you know, that was certainly a memorable moment. I know a lot of your listeners probably recall it because it received a lot of attention in the media. Mm-hmm. But throughout the entire COVID response, she was always to the left of Governor Wolf, which I didn't think was possible. She was to the left of Rachel Richard Levine, the health secretary that's now an admiral. It was a bunch of nonsense. And I did my best to bring some common sense solutions to during that time period. But that was certainly the highlight of her tenure as a Montgomery County commissioner.
All right, Joe, real quick, just while I have you on the line, a caller actually has a question about nominations. So we're going to try and go live here and see if we can do good work, like Bo Snerdly said in his interview with Chris. And hopefully, Victoria, you screened the call well. They have a question for Joe. Are you open to it?
Hello. Mr. Gale, I was wondering what you think that the possibility of Judge Del Ritchie being awarded possibly to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court if there's a retirement, since he went along with Val Kush and their plan to do this bail reform, which has now essentially turned us into Philadelphia with no bail for any type of theft charges and things like that, and we're releasing people under this new act set up by the bail commission.
Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We lost Joe. It's okay. We'll get him back. So we have a limited amount of time left. 610-850-0990. I'll take your calls at the top of the hour. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com.
Get the answer on our mobile app at 990theanswer.com, on Alexa, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn, and the Odyssey app. We're Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Hi, this is Hugh Hewitt. Join me weekday mornings at 11 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
All right. Sorry about that. We were with Montgomery County Commissioner Joe Gale on the line, and we got disconnected there. But there was a caller that had a question that was also disconnected. But I was trying to jot down notes when it happened. Del Ritchie is the name he brought up. Del Ritchie. Have you heard of him, Joe?
Yes. Judge Thomas Del Ritchie is the former president judge in Montgomery County Court of Common Pleas.
Okay.
And I believe I got cut off, but he was asking you, does Commissioner Gale believe Judge Del Ritchie will be appointed to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court? Does that sound correct?
I think so. Yes. Yep. That's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
I would be very surprised if that were the case. There is one opening on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and the election for that seat is this year in 2023. Okay. And actually, one of the Montgomery County Court of Common Pleas judges, Judge Carolyn Tornetta Carluccio, announced her candidacy for that seat. So I would be surprised if a fellow county judge from the same area would be filling that vacancy. I haven't heard anything about that. So can't give a direct answer, but I hope that brings some more information to that.
No, I appreciate it. Joe, I just wanted our conversation to wrap up properly. So I appreciate all your time. Good luck. Montgomery County, obviously we call the politics the swamp, but I love everything about Montgomery County. Love spending time there, the restaurants, all the activities. So it's a great county you live in. We just got to switch up some
of
the politics.
And I'm doing my best to keep it that way. It seems like all roads lead through Montgomery County. And if your listeners ever want to get a hold of me, my website is joegale.com. That's G-A-L-E, joegale.com. And thank you for having me on the program, Ed.
Thank you, Joe. Happy New Year to you.
You too. Thank you.
All right, straight phones the rest of the way. We have Ralph, who wanted to comment on the Chris and Bo Snerdly interview. Ralph, good morning.
Yeah, hi. You know, that was great listening to Joe Gale. I mean, you know, I'm in Chester County. I got to say, I'll tell you what, you know, we really could use a Joe Gale here. It's just, I mean, hey, you know, Joe has his work cut out for him in Montgomery County. But, you know, I learned, like some of our Republican guys here, you know, they voted for and supported Josh Shapiro. Yep. Which, you know, was very disturbing, very upsetting. But that's not the reason I was calling, though, when you had Bo Snerdly on earlier. I wanted to say, you know, I had the pleasure of meeting Bo back in the early 90s. I used to get tickets to go on to Rush's TV show. Do you remember his TV show?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, you know, that's where I got to meet him. And now, I got to tell you a quick story.
Quickly?
So I went up, and, you know, I got there a little early, and I got up to get a drink of water, and I'm walking past in the set, and they're setting it up, and the cameraman called me over. He goes, "Sir, would you mind sitting in Rush's chair for a moment? We're setting up the lighting."
Oh, man.
Yeah. So I'm sitting in his chair, and if you remember the set, you know, all the books, the way things ought to be, everything's behind you. On his desk, you know, there's the desk calendar. It's days held hostage.
Yep.
You had the gavel. You had that microphone. And I'm sitting in this chair. What an experience that was.
Oh, thanks so much, Ralph. No, I appreciate you sharing the story. That's awesome. I think we have one more call, Victoria. I'll try and get him in here. You got 30 seconds. Mr. Producer, go! Oh, where is he? Did he drop off?
Hello, is you talking to me?
Yes, sir. Sorry, I didn't have your name.
Okay, this is Professor Jeff from Philadelphia and Swarthmore, the Kremlin on the Crumb.
All right, 30 seconds, Professor Jeff. Go ahead.
I'd just like to say that this business about prohibiting gas stoves, you know, there's a reason why people use gas stoves and gas heating. It's because it's one quarter as expensive as electricity. And there's a reason for that, because how do you make electricity? You burn something.
Yeah.
Of course, if you're a Republican, you might use nuclear power, but we know that's off the table.
Hmm.
What these people want to do is to make unavailability of basic services a fact of life. There's not enough electricity to convert all these cars into electricity and all these homes into electrical resistance heating, which is a horrible waste of energy.
Thank you very much, Professor Jeff. Nope, you bring up an important point. I will be back with you tomorrow to talk more about it. The gas stoves, yes, the government wants to take them away. It's the continued leftist war on energy. It's happening. I'm Fast Eddie Chiazzo. Be back with you live tomorrow. It's Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. Thank you.
Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. WNTP Philadelphia, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.